activities. We have John Van Name here from, it says the Naval Environmental Group.
Well, U.S. Navy Fleet Forces Command.
U.S. Navy Fleet,
Fleet Forces Command out of Norfolk, Virginia.
You have an acronym for that?
USFF. We have acronyms for everything.
I know.
Good one.
Okay, well, welcome. And I know you have a presentation. The staff should have it loaded up. Proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council, and members of the audience for this opportunity to brief the council on the Atlantic Fleet Training and Testing Environmental Impact Statement. And again, my name is John Van Aim with Fleet Forces Command out of Norfolk. Quick acknowledgement, right behind me I have Dave McDuffie, our lead biologist out of Fleet Forces, and Carter Waterson, our lead fisheries biologist out of Naval Facilities Engineering Command, NAVFAC. I guess I got to work the slides. Ma'am, those slides don't seem to be moving. There we go. Little desired outcomes and context of the briefing today. I'm not going to read all the agenda points, but the Atlantic Fleet Training and Testing EIS is currently underway. What I wanted to do today is provide an overview of the effort, and the desired outcome is to ensure that the New England Fishery Management Council is aware of the effort and is invited and pleased, has the opportunity to provide input when our draft document goes out. Bless you. A little bit of background. The Atlantic Fleet Training and Testing EIS is currently being prepared by the following commands: Fleet Forces Command, Naval Air Systems Command, Naval Sea Systems Command, as well as Office of Naval Research. Previously, our environmental impact statements were prepared by the individual commands, but this effort combines a multitude of naval activities. This effort is going to sustain at-sea training and testing by supporting Marine Mammal Protection Act reauthorizations, consolidating existing authorizations into a single authorization, consolidating existing environmental impact statements into one document, and supporting current and future training and testing activity, and to increase the flexibility for those activities. Public scoping meetings have already been held from 23 August through 1 September 2010. The scoping period ended on 14 September 2010. Okay, real quickly, just an overview of a little bit of background. Previously, and some folks in the audience may be aware of the Atlantic Fleet Active Sonar Training EIS, OEIS, that ended up in 2009, and that is a study area, the Eastern Seaboard, good piece of the Atlantic Ocean, as well as the Gulf of Mexico. Also here in the Northeast, we had the, just south of the Northeast, Fishery Management Council's area of responsibility, the VACAPES op areas. And in the Northeast, we have operation areas off of Atlantic City, along the Northeast, Atlantic City, Narragansett, and Boston, as well as a seagull. And if anyone understands where that acronym came from, I've been asking, and no one can tell me, the seagull op area just offshore. Okay, well, let me... Okay, that works better. Our proposed action, purpose and need, the proposed action is to support fleet training and testing events, including the use of active sonar and explosives in the waters off the east coast of the United States, the lower Chesapeake Bay, where we conduct some mine warfare training events, and the Gulf of Mexico. The purpose and need for the proposed action is to achieve and maintain fleet readiness for training and testing activities in the western North Atlantic Ocean and Gulf of Mexico. We need to meet statutory requirements of Title 10, as well as we're looking to attain and maintain compliance with applicable environmental regulations. Previous slide, we showed you the some of the study areas of our previous documents, and the Atlantic Fleet AFTT study area goes up north a little bit. It still covers, it approximates the Second Fleet area of responsibility, but we've got the entirety of the Eastern Seaboard and the Gulf of Mexico. So previous documents, previous areas that were studied independently now are combined into one effort. Again, Again, the study area, the document incorporates previously completed environmental impact statements, the Virginia Capes Range Complex, Cherry Point off of North Carolina, Jacksonville off of Florida, Gulf of Mexico. We also are pulling in environmental impact statements conducted by NAB Sea Systems Command off of Panama City, and environmental documents that were previously conducted in the Naval and Sea Warfare Center, Newport, Rhode Island, the South Florida Ocean Measurement Facility off of just about Miami Way in Florida, and we're also including selected ports and pierside locations, the use of active sonar during maintenance-type activities, testing activities at various ports along the East Coast, including in the New England area, including the ships that pull into Bath, Maine, the shipyard up in Bath, Maine. I'll give you some examples of some of the training and testing activities that are conducted throughout the study area. Most of what we're going to see doesn't necessarily happen in the Northeast, but it happens throughout the study area along the eastern seaboard. We've got mine warfare events, which include mine laying, the use and development of mine countermeasures, and mine neutralization systems. Some of these systems, obviously, as you can see by the pictures, they may be divers with explosives or systems that are towed behind helicopters or, in many future cases, be unmanned vehicles. Got surface warfare events, which include the firing of ordnance from rotary wing helicopters as well as shipboard events firing at surface targets, missiles, airdrop bombs, as well as gun ordnance. We're also going to be looking at maritime security operations, which are needed to ensure force protection, to make sure that the crews are well prepared to never let an incident like the coal tragedy to ever happen again. We've got air warfare events, air combat maneuvers, use of countermeasures like chaff and flares, firing of air-to-air missiles, and firing of airborne guns off of fixed-wing and rotary-wing aircraft. Amphibious warfare, and a lot of this, as you might imagine, goes off of offshore of Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. We've got shore bombardment, which there's a limited opportunity to conduct that any longer along the East Coast. We do it at sea. The firing exercise with impasse, we put a buoy field out, and we use simulated land masses for the crews to train against. And you've got LCACs, and again, those types of operations primarily happen off of North Carolina, the amphibious landings. We are looking at some small-scale humanitarian-type relief landings down in Florida in the Mayport area. Anti-submarine warfare. And again, the full suite of anti-submarine warfare activities, helicopter deployed sonars, P-3 Orions, the upcoming P-8, maritime patrol aircraft deploying sonobuoys. We use a variety of targets as well as a variety of hull-mounted sonars on the DDGs like they build up in Bath, as well as the submarines that mainly pull out of Connecticut. And we have some of our new construction activities. Again, the destroyers pulling out of Bath, Maine will go out for sea trials. And mainly conduct many of those in the Northeast in that Seagull Lab area that we saw in one of the previous slides. But anything that a ship will need to do, as you might expect, is being tasked to do during these trials before delivery of the ship to the Navy. Goals of the document. There are many, but mainly to support the renewal of existing MMPA authorizations, ESA and Magnuson-Stevens Act consultations. We're consolidating six EISs and associated MMPA final rules into one document. The first of those final rules that we had for the AFEST, existing MMPA authorizations, begin to expire in 2014. So this document will replace all of those previous documents. We're going to conduct environmental analysis for training and testing activities within the study area that are new and different than what we studied before. We're going to conduct environmental analysis and sea coverage for MMPA, ESA, and Magnuson-Stevens Act for the ATSI activities associated with the introduction of new weapons. The DDG 1000 is being, Zumwalt class destroyer is being built right now up in Bath, Maine. We're looking at systems such as that. We want to achieve a more complete integration of the acquisition, training, and testing activities, which this document is doing and will do. And we want to utilize the best available science, the best available acoustic modeling techniques in our analysis as we renew this analysis. And by the use of this one document, instead of the numerous documents we had previously, we're going to have better consistency amongst the Navy. We have a similar effort underway, a companion effort underway right now in Hawaii-SoCal, the Hawaii-SoCal Training and Testing EIS. We're on a fairly parallel timeline, and both documents are staying very well coordinated, again, to make sure we have good Navy-wide consistency in the analysis and the conclusions we reach. Like any EIS, we have alternatives. The no-action alternative is mainly based on those existing documents and authorizations we have in hand. The alternative 1 and 2 will increase training operations, increase the flexibility of the training and testing events that occur, as well as look at the new systems and weaponry that may be being brought into the Navy. We're looking through 2019 timeline. Some of the resources being analyzed, there's a whole laundry list here, as you might imagine, some of the ones that we focus on, looking at the endangered species, looking at the fish habitat, essential fish habitat, and marine mammal effects. But again, it's a comprehensive document, and we'll be looking at all of the resource areas that apply. Some of the resources analyzed, EFH and fisheries. An EFH assessment will be submitted to the National Marine Fisheries Service for concurrently with the EIS-OEIS. The assessment will analyze the potential impact on designated EFH in the study area and any federally managed species. Habitat areas of particular concern will be analyzed. And again, we welcome the input. That's why we're here today to speak with you all. We welcome the input of the council and any members in the audience. When this document goes out for review or as part of our EFH regulatory process. Cooperating agencies, as with our previous documents, the National Marine Fisheries Service is our cooperating agency on this document. They're the agency responsible for the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and they will be using this EIS to support their decision-making for MMPA authorization also. Public engagement. The notice of intent was already released. As I said earlier, we already had scoping meetings. The scoping period has concluded, but the draft EIS will be coming out. We will be announcing the availability of that in local media. Public hearings will be placed, and we're right now tentatively scheduling to have a public hearing here in Portland, which is good. I've been scoping out the restaurants this week. And we have information available on a project website and also in local libraries and other repositories. The final EIS, after that draft EIS is submitted and we have our public hearings, the final EIS will be announced again in the Federal Register and local newspapers. The MMPA final rule will also be in the Federal Register, and as will the Record of Decision, the ROD. Tentative schedule, we're looking to release the draft EIS to the public in early 2012 for the public hearings, also directly after the release. The final EIS, middle of 2013, and the Record of Decision by late 2013. Again, our regulatory timeline that we're looking to meet is to have those new consultations, those new authorizations in place prior to the expiration of the existing consultation, which is authorization, which is 2014. So real quickly, in conclusion, requesting the New England Fishery Management Council to remain engaged, and participate in our process. We'll be letting you all know when the document is out and encourage members of the council and members of the audience to provide comments and help make sure that we do a proper and robust job. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, we know the Navy's been conducting training off the shores and you know, adjacent to fishing grounds for decades. And recently, the president signed a national ocean policy for, you know, zoning the oceans. And part of this policy is to have all the stakeholders at the table for a bunch of trade-offs and everything. And I don't want you to take this personally, but what I see happening is just the opposite. We see the Navy coming to us wanting to zone their training. We see the Bomber task forces wanting to zone where they can put windmills up. And I fear that fishermen and their fishing grounds are going to be squeezed out because we don't have this coordinated effort that the president said we were going to have, where everyone's at the table with a lot of give and takes, a lot of trade-offs. And so why are you here now? And we haven't seen you in 2 decades or 3 decades since we've been around. And don't take it personal. I'm just wondering why all of a sudden fishermen are getting squeezed out.
No, sir, I'm not taking it. I won't take it personal. You know, if there has been briefings on these documents, and I believe there should have been to the Fishery Council Management, Fishery Management Councils in the past. Folks in my office, obviously, were aware of the executive order. We've got people up and down my chain of leadership, remaining engaged and looking at that. Let me tell you, what we're looking to do here is, particularly for the Northeast, there's very little new. I mean, I don't view this document as a zoning document. The ships coming out of Bath, Maine, have been conducting their sea trials out in the Seagull area for decades and hopefully for decades to come. The naval training, as far as I can tell, has coexisted with the fishing community. I know in our previous documents they had a pointed effort to make sure that we reached out and engaged with the fishing community. We realize that's an important segment, an important user of the resource out there, which, in my opinion, is what that executive order is all about, compatible uses. I think Navy, like probably the fishery, the fishing industry, rather not see it as zoning, although that may be how it's looked at by some people. But we believe we can operate, and that's why we're here engaging with the council, you know, to have that shared use and that cooperative use of those ocean spaces. So everything that we're talking about in this document, the training areas, those are long-established training areas. The activities are predominantly the same as we've seen in the past. But we're not expecting anything new that's going to squeeze the fishing industry out of certain areas or into other areas. And I won't take it personally.
Any other questions? Any comments? David?
Maybe not somewhat related to this. I certainly wouldn't want a guy who lays mines to take things personally. Is there going to be any unexploded ordnance left from any of these exercises that you're aware of, or is the goal to, explode everything?
Well, obviously the goal is for the munitions to perform as intended. Many of the hazardous operations occur in well offshore, in deeper waters. I think, I don't have the exact numbers, but any kind of a dud rate for munitions these days with the munitions we have today is very, very low.
Okay, that's the only question I would have, is if there's going to be ordnance used in an area we're fishing in, if we could be notified that there's, always the possibility of new unexploded ordnances. Having dragged up a few leftovers from World War II, I'm a little concerned any time I see something with a stripe on it.
Yeah, understood. We all read about that in the news. When these hazardous activities do occur, typically, and I believe if not every case, it should be, but they have noticed the mariners and whatnot, and the activities are well advertised in advance to make sure that the other users of the resource of that sea space is aware of what's going on. And to my knowledge, that most of the time, if there are other folks in that area, the Navy will, defer, delay, move. That's why we need that increased flexibility, is because we will look to move the event to another area so as not to have that conflict.
Any other questions for John? I had a question.
Say there's
a community on the Eastern Seaboard that wants to invite you guys to conduct some of your exercises with some of your ordinances. Who would they talk to?
I honestly don't know. I mean,
instead of putting it way offshore, I mean, let's say there's a real need or purpose to. Let's just say there's a need for that type of activity, and the community wants to embrace it. Is there somebody they could talk to?
I think primary way would be during this process.
So write a letter.
If you see activities, let us know. And we missed the scoping opportunity.
Yeah.
But during the review process, if there are things that if there's any concern about where things are going on and the activities being presented, let us know.
So let's just say there's a concern now that could possibly be dealt with through some activities that your fleet might want to conduct. I heard a lot about offshore training, but what about nearshore? I mean, there's got to be a need to blow things up in shallow water, right?
Very select areas where they do that type of mine. Primarily off of Virginia Beach, off of Dam Neck.
Maybe like Muskeget or Southern Monomoy or the south part of North Beach. Or
not familiar with those areas, sir.
Oh, okay. Maybe we could talk offline.
We could talk offline, absolutely.
Right. Anything further? Rodney?
Okay, good. Thank you again.
I just want to clarify one thing. I spent the 60s and the 70s fishing off of Hampton, Virginia, and out of Norfolk. And back then, the Navy never delayed anything for me. They always asked me to leave the area because they were doing some exercises. Unless the policy has changed.
Well, they still do ask to the folks to leave the area. But I know if for whatever reason, they don't leave the area, then the event stands down. Yes, they will ask. If there's an event scheduled, they'll ask the people that have come in when the NOTMAR's been established, they'll ask them to leave. But if they don't leave, it doesn't go.
I thought if I didn't leave, I was getting blown up.
No,
so
sir.
I left.
No, sir. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John. Okay, we're on to our last agenda item before lunch is the open period for public comment. This is an opportunity for anyone in the public.